All right, are we going?
We are going.
Yeah. All right. Sometimes I chuckle myself.
Somebody has to.
What's up? What do I say? What's up? This movie's not up. Okay. What's up? This is Movies on Up. They grow up so fast. I'm Dave, joined by my fully grown up man of a co-host, Mr. Ryan.
Your step co-host.
Yeah, yeah. Our tagline for this week, they grow up so fast. He's Ryan, I'm Dave. We are Movies on Up. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, we will step a prize package right down to the mailbox, and our brethren of mail carriers will carry it to you.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's our tagline for this week.
We will not have put our nuts on it at any point.
No. No drums. This week, Ken comes out, starring Jack Traynor, probably. And
yeah.
I think D. Quaid's in there. I know James Franco's in there.
Yes.
It looks bonkers.
And an alien gun.
Yes. It's little dude with his brother who's in with some bad people who finds an alien gun, so they're on the run from crazy James Franco and his gang and alien bounty hunters. So, bonkers, I'm in for it.
Like, oh, boy.
Like, it sounds up my alley.
I like Jack Traynor maybe more than the next guy, but I'm going to sit this one
I don't
out.
Know that I know Jack. He was in a Transformers, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, see, I've never seen any of them. I don't think I've seen him in anything. I've seen Franco.
He was in that, I just watched Bonus, or whatever, that Free Fire movie with Brie Larson that Scorsese produced.
Oh, he was in that?
Yeah.
Free Fire?
Yes.
That's a Ben Wheatley movie.
Yes, Ben Wheatley did it. Armie Hammer's in there.
Yeah. A lot of people. Charlton Copley.
Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. I had such high hopes for that. And
yeah, Jack Traynor was the guy that started shooting.
Okay.
He was the guy
that
beat
that
the
makes
shit
sense.
Out of
he was okay.
Yeah, that movie was fun.
Anyway, that comes out, and Ken is another word for family, and Jack Traynor and the little dude that finds the gun are brothers in this movie. So that got us to thinking, hey, let's do our favorite movie, Brothers.
Done our favorite Jack Traynor movies that you could find out if you've seen it in a lot of stuff.
Favorite movie, Brothers. This is one of those, I like these lists because it's just open. And it wasn't like, oh, movies starring the Baldwin brothers. This is movies about... Or
people playing brothers.
Yes.
If the Baldwin brothers were in a movie playing brothers, that would be fine.
That would count, yeah.
Yes.
I had fun putting this list together. I have like an also-ran of another five that I would be fine putting in my top five if I had to. Like,
I have five really good also-rans that are only also-rans because we talk about them a lot.
And you know what? I went to 10. I mean, some of mine we talk about a lot, but I went to 10, and that's when I stopped. And I realized, like, I could keep going.
Sure.
Like, I left some off that I know you'll have, and there's some that were similar that I left off.
You think I'm going to have.
For different reasons. I have a solid 10. Like, I would be fine just counting down from 10 this episode. We'll start at 5. So, Ryan, your number 5 favorite brother movie.
My number 5 is directed by Wes Anderson, starring Owen Wilson, Adrian Brody, and Jason Schwartzman. It is The Desjardins Limited from 2007. Desjardins isn't Anderson's best movie, and when I thought of Brothers in a Wes Anderson movie, it was not even the first one that came to mind. First one is Bottle Rocket. Oh, I got both the Wilsons.
See, that's one I forgot. I love Bottle Rocket.
But they don't play brothers. They're just friends.
Well, Future Man.
Well.
Future Man is the other dude's brother, the one that's not the Wilson.
Right. So they don't play brothers in Bottle Rocket, spoiler alert. And then you have Royal Tannenbaums, does have brothers, played by Owen and Ben Stiller, which is probably a... which I think is a better movie, but I think it's also a bit more well-known. Both Tannenbaums and Darjeeling do have quite a bit in common. They both have to do with a family trying to cope with the death of the patriarch. Death, in air quotes, maybe, if you've seen one of these and not the other. But Desjardins kind of strips away almost all of the excess family members. We don't see the entirety of the Royal Tannenbaums. We don't need the entirety of the family in this. This is a movie just about the three brothers trying to get on a train to grieve, reconnect with each other, and possibly meet their absent mother. So as far as a movie about brotherhood goes, this is, I think, as close to on the nose as you will get, at least from Wes Anderson. Like I said, he's got a lot of similar themes within his movies, but I think the brotherhood theme here is the central one, and that's why it makes the list. This was the fifth movie that Anderson directed, and it had taken about 10 years But I think at this point was where I started to get a little bit of Anderson fatigue. It starts to get derivative. You know what a Wes Anderson movie is by this time. You know what an Owen Wilson performance in a Wes Anderson movie is going to be. He gives that here. Even Schwartzman, kind of the same deal. What I really liked about this one was Adrian Brody, who I thought was kind of a curveball. He added a breath of fresh air, I guess, a different take, just something new to...
Which you don't get from a lot of Wes Anderson movies.
You don't. Cast the same
people. Because you have the same people. And this is a weird one. I'm glad you brought that. I didn't even think of it. I love Bottle Rocket.
Yes.
And I love Rushmore. Like, yeah. I love those two movies. After that, I kind of lose it with Wes Anderson because he gets too Wes Anderson-y.
Yes.
I think Tannenbaum's and Life Aquatic were just too much. This, I felt like he dialed it back a little bit. This one, it still felt like a Wes Anderson movie, but not in spite of itself. I felt like this was one of his more low-key Wes Anderson movies. And it's the last one I've liked, because since then I feel like everything has just been way too Wes Anderson-y. So I really do like this one. I'm glad you brought it up, because I didn't think of it, but it absolutely could have made my list. Sometimes when we do lists, especially ones where you can do almost any, like where you can stretch.
Dinner's open-ended is this.
Yeah, you can kind of reach and, you know, we'll kind of think of something that like, oh, Ryan will probably roll his eyes at this. So I put this number 5, but it would be higher.
Just in case I didn't like it?
Yeah. Okay. So for my number 5 favorite movie, Brothers, I have from 1988 and from 1995, directed by John McTiernan, I have Hans and Simon Gruber, played by Jeremy Irons as Simon in Die Hard with a Vengeance and Alan Rickman as Hans in Die Hard. This is one of the first ones that came to mind. They're not in the same movie.
No, they're not.
But they are movie brothers.
You're correct.
And John McClane kills Hans Gruber.
He does.
Which makes Simon Gruber...
Happy trails, Hans.
God, Simon Gruber mad. And there you have Die Hard 3. So I couldn't leave these off because I would watch... I mean, we can't now, but I would watch... screw Die Hard Year 1. I want the Gruber brothers, a prequel series. Like, Alan Rickman is so early in his... I think it was his first film credit. Is such a fun, he's so good as Hans Gruber. Like, he's such a good villain because he's evil, but he's human. Like, he's this evil dude, but he's not comic booky. And in movies like that, a lot of times the villains are either...
Especially in the 80s.
Yeah.
But he was a nice fit for John McClane, who himself was not comic book.
He felt grounded, and it was just this convoluted plot of like, oh, we're terrorists. Nope, we're really just thieves. And he played that perfectly. And the scene where he's doing the Detroit accent, I guess was ad-libbed. I remember reading a story about it somewhere where... that wasn't going to be in there until he did a fake...
And it was just so good they kept it.
Yes. And then you have Jeremy Irons, another great British actor, who... Die Hard with a Vengeance is a different movie than Die Hard. It is more comic booky. So Simon Gruber is more comic booky than Hans, but he's still really, really good. The plot is ridiculous. The movie's made by Sammy Jackson and John McClane together. I really like both of these movies, and I realize it's cheating a little bit since they're never on screen together, but they are movie brothers.
That's true. We will get more, not that you would imagine, but we will bring Hans Gruber back in a couple weeks. There will be some Hans Gruber discussion. So if you didn't get enough, yeah, I know, you're trying to figure, well, what are we doing in 2 weeks?
Oh, this week.
Yes, we're going to talk about it in a couple hours.
Now, I mean.
Yes, yeah, but you guys will hear about it in a couple weeks. Right now you're going to hear about my number 4, which at this point on my list, there were movies that came to mind instantly. I was like, oh, I really love Rain Man. That would be a great one to put on the list. However, I've talked about it a lot. So let me put a Rain Man stand-in, which is not to say that it's not a good movie, but it's got that same dynamic, and we haven't talked about it. We never talk about Lassie Hallström's What's Eating Gilbert Grape from 1993, starring Johnny Depp, Leo DiCaprio, and Juliette Lewis. I've said many times how much I like Rain Man and that relationship between Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman. This one doesn't get the critical love that Rain Man got. And to be honest with you, this should have been DiCaprio's Oscar. He was fine, The Revenant. He was fine in a lot of things. But that Oscar there was a makeup for a long overdue award that's been sitting on Tommy Lee Jones's shelf for 20 years. His portrayal of mental illness is really, really incredible. And
uncomfortable. It's so good, it's uncomfortable.
Right.
I think.
Dustin Hoffman is not uncomfortable. It's autism.
They're different. Yeah,
right.
They're different.
They're not
illnesses.
Playing the same illness. Yeah. But Hoffman did a great job. He won an Oscar for his performance. And I'm not trying to say he didn't deserve it because he was fantastic. But what Leo did was much more grounded. And I think it was much more difficult to pull off. Because he had tics, for sure, but they weren't like, you know, Wapner. It wasn't, let me drive the car, or hot water. He didn't have any of that stuff to do, but he was still able to give a very realistic performance of mental illness. And you know, we talk a lot about DiCaprio in this movie because he crushes it, but Johnny Depp was really good in this too. He plays Gilbert Grape, the primary caregiver for his brother, and by extension, his mother. Neither of them are in any capacity to care for themselves. We see him fiercely protective of his brother. Nobody touches Arnie. And we see him ultimately fail in that relationship with Arnie. And I think Juliette Lewis was really good in here as well. Lots of great performances. But for me, this movie does rely on the Depp DiCaprio stuff. It doesn't disappoint. And you know, maybe in a world where we don't have Rain Man, I think 5 years before this, maybe more people do talk about Gilbert Grape.
Yeah, this was one of my also-rans. Glad you put it on your list because I wanted to and I left it off. But there's a reason, you know, this movie's 27, 25 years, was 92,
95. Yeah,
it's 25 years old. And the two leads are still two of the biggest movie stars in the world. And this movie is why. Like, Johnny Depp, okay, if you just landed on this planet maybe 10 years ago, you probably don't understand why Johnny Depp's a big-time movie star. But then you see something like this and what he was doing in that era, and it's like, oh, I get it. And Leo, especially, to be that young and just this pretty boy, this isn't a pretty boy role.
No.
This isn't a heartthrob role. And for him to just go at it, it's so good. I love this movie, and Benny and June I'll always associate together. Mm-hmm. And those are two Johnny Depp performances that are just, that's why he's a movie star. And I miss that Johnny Depp. But my number four, we almost went Jeremy Irons back to back. Because there is almost a subgenre of brother movies is like 1988's Dead Ringers, where Jeremy Irons played twin gynecologists. And then I thought, like, okay, I don't want to have, I almost had another one of these movies up higher where Nicolas Cage, I think, got an Oscar nom for adaptation because he's so good and that movie is so good. And he's Charlie and the other Kaufman. Mm. He's so good in that movie. And I wanted to put that, but then I thought, of a third one. I thought, I can't have three movies that are just the same dude playing two brothers.
Where it's, you can, you could not have the Tom Hardy one, right?
I didn't put the Tom Hardy one.
Okay.
On.
That's instead, what I thought this was going to be.
So, I mean, we have these great, all right, here's Jeremy Irons, this all-time great actor. You have Oscar winner Nicolas Cage doing it, which was adaptation, which almost made the list. But instead, out of those, I went with Kevin Heffernan from 2006's Beer Fest, directed by Jay Chandrasekhar, the third Broken Lizard movie. He plays Gil, who dies and then is replaced by Landfill. They don't ever have screen time together.
Like the Grubers.
Yeah, but they're,
but
in, the
they're in the
same
movie.
Yeah. And it's, I love the Broken Lizard guys. We talked a lot about Super Troopers when Super Troopers 2 came out. Super Troopers 2 did not disappoint. I loved it. I love Club Dread. I just rewatched it like a week ago, and it still holds up. Beer Fest, I think, is somehow, I think it's found its niche audience, but I feel like it's somehow underrated because it's just as ridiculous. This one, I think they turn it up to 11. I think of everything they've done, this is the nuttiest one they've done. I mean, they kill Kevin Heffernan's character halfway through, and then just replace him with Kevin Heffernan playing his twin, who is the polar opposite. You have Steve Lemmy jerking off the frogs. Like, this movie is just insane. And it's another one of those, like Super Troopers, I know I've seen the whole thing more than once. I don't know that I've ever watched it from front to back.
You know, we said it when we did the Super Troopers episode. You don't need to.
Their movies
enough
are made
jokes.
Like sketch comedy. Yeah. They're sketch comedy movies that tell one story, and they're brilliant, and there's not a troupe or anybody that's been able to make movies like this. I know Broken Lizard, they've had a good career, and they've made it, but I feel like people don't appreciate, like, they're really good filmmakers, actually. Like, to be able to pull off what they're doing is phenomenal. And that was my number four, was Kevin Heffernan over the Oscar nominees.
Yeah, fair enough. My number three is a comedy. You've already alluded to Step Brothers. You know, obviously, that's kind of one that comes to mind when you start thinking about movie Brothers. I feel like we've talked about that one. So I was like, all right, well, is there another perhaps comedic movie? Because the rest of my list isn't entirely funny. Another comedic movie that has some Step Brothers in it. And I do enjoy Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly team up. I'm not like a shill for them. But then I started thinking about comedic duos, Step Brothers. While Chris Farley and David Spade don't play brothers in 1995's Tommy Boy, directed by Peter Siegel, Rob Lowe does, for a little while, play the stepbrother of Chris Farley's Tommy Callahan. And Tommy Boy, for me, as much as Talladega Nights or any of the Will Ferrell things, you know, for people that are maybe 10 years younger than me, are kind of remote stoppers where you stop, you watch it, it doesn't matter what part it is. Maybe even like some of the Broken Lizard stuff. Tommy Boy is that for me. I quote Farley and Spade with the same frequency that somebody else might quote Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. But what I really like about Tommy Boy is that you have a road trip movie, and they actually do throw in a little bit of a mystery along the way. As it turns out, Tommy's new stepbrother might actually be fucking his new stepmom. It's silly. It's peak Chris Farley. He literally died 3 years later. And for all the great sketches he had on SNL, I will always think of him as the bumbling car parts salesman, because that's who he was and that's who he cared about.
My number three, it's a movie that I know I've brought up before. It's one of those where I feel like it's such an underappreciated movie that was so far ahead of its time that any chance I get to throw it on a list, I'm going to throw it on a list. And maybe it's not. They're brothers. And I mean, I can't not put 1997's Gattaca, written and directed by Andrew Niccol, on a list when I get a chance. And in this one, you have Ethan Hawke and Lauren Dean of Mumford fame doing Vincent and Anton Freeman. Yeah, their relationship isn't super brotherly in the movie, but it plays out a lot in flashbacks. So maybe played by the younger actors, you see a lot of them growing up and how they got to where they are, where Ethan Hawke is substandard human and he's low on the totem pole. And then Lauren Dean, handsome and way underrated as a movie star in the late 90s, is this agent among the best people. So, but I like the dynamic on it because it is one of those where it's like Brooklyn's Finest, where I think that was one where Joaquin and Marky Mark, one's a criminal, one's a cop. It's similar to that, to where it's just these two brothers, they were close growing up, something happened, and they grew apart. But basically, it's just brothers or not. Watch Gattaca if you haven't seen it, because that movie is great. It was sorely underappreciated. Lauren Dean is a great leading man that I don't understand why he never picked up. Mumford is great. If he had a brother in that movie, it would have been on this list, but it's not. I mean, I don't get to mention Mumford enough, so watch Gattaca. Lauren Dean double feature.
Gattaca's really good sci-fi that I think was just before its time.
It's from 97. That movie's 21 years old. Mm-hmm. The movie is 21 years old.
I mean, if came out today, like, I mean, to me, it's very much like the Alex Garland stuff.
It's very much like Alex Garland. Yeah. It's very much like Black Mirror. It's very much, we're on this like sci-fi renaissance now. Not necessarily in the big screen. Like, I don't think we're getting the big screen sci-fi movies like we used to, but there's like four or five anthology sci-fi shows between Amazon and Hulu and Netflix and stuff. And there's that market for it. So this is one of those. If you released Gattaca today, it's
a hit. Yeah, I mean, if you like that stuff and you haven't gone back to watch it, because it's easy to miss mid-90s stuff, mid to late, you go back and check it out.
It's not an action movie.
No, it's slow moving, which at the time, slow moving sci-fi was not good.
At the time it came, I mean, it came out with the time when Armageddon was out. That kind of stuff was coming out. So I love Gattaca. I absolutely adore Gattaca. And they're brothers.
My number two, I had a hard time because there's a couple boxing / fighting movies that if you've ever listened to this podcast, you know that I'm going to put one of these on here. I like Warrior and I like Raging Bull more than I like 2010's The Fighter, directed by David O. Russell, starring Mark Wahlberg, Christian Bale, and Amy Adams. But those other two movies get a lot of run on this show. So I went with the movie that I like less, but I still like an awful lot.
Oscar winner Marky Mark from that, right?
Oscar winner Batman from
that. I knew Bale won for that. Yeah, Bale won. Mark was nominated.
He was nominated. And we'll talk about somebody else that was nominated for that movie, too, because it did get two acting wins. But all three between Raging Bull and Warrior and The Fighter all have contentious family relationships at their heart, to put it mildly, I guess. Mickey is not fighting Dickie in the ring like Brendan and Tommy fight in The Fighter, but he is fighting Dickie's past and current motivations, a bit like the LaMotta brothers in Raging Bull. The acting in this is incredible. It's not really a surprise with the David O. Russell movie, but like I said, Bale won Best Supporting Actor. Melissa Leo won for Best Supporting Actress for her equally as damaged portrayal of Ward's mom and manager. The family dynamics here are far more important than the boxing. It's a movie about a pretty famous boxer, but you don't even see his most famous opponent. But early in his career, the biggest opponent for Mickey Ward was his family. There's a great scene, and maybe it's a bit on the nose, but towards the end of the movie where Ward physically and mentally overcomes that relationship with his brother in the movie and maybe is even able to come to terms with that. And it kind of catapults him to being a successful boxer, which is exactly when the movie cuts off. As much as it is about boxing, the arc is a family one, and that's what David O. Russell gives you. There's talk about, I believe they cast Turtle as Arturo Gatti for the next, if they do a sequel to The Fighter, where they do the Ward-Gatti trilogy. I mean, when you think about this being a career biopic, it's not. It's to a certain point in his career.
It's chapter one of a, yeah, essentially a trilogy almost.
Yeah, it's just the very beginning. But the arc that we're going on, usually we see, you know, somebody go up through their greatest rival and maybe even end up retiring, like we did with LaMotta, and we see him after boxing. Mickey Ward, you don't. With The Fighter, he just so happens to be a boxer, but it's really about him coming to terms with sort of his toxic family. And he does come to grips with that. And then whatever else happens, that's not what this movie's about. It might be what the next one, if they make it, is about. But I do love The Fighter. The performances in it are fantastic. Christian Bale is amazing. Amy Adams is really good too, but that's not a big surprise. This is just one that when I think of boxing movies or fighting movies about brothers, it's like the third one I think of. It's the third one that I like. But it's still fantastic. Raging Bull is an all-time classic. Everybody loves that. And Warrior, we give a lot of run to because it's Joel.
See, I left Warrior off because I figured
it's
it'd
obvious.
Be
obvious. Yeah, for us.
You said something that's weird. Like, do you think of any biopic sequel? Because you mentioned that was just the beginning of a story. You think of Ali. It only went to the Rumble in the Jungle. Like, there was so much Ali after that. You could have done an Ali 2 or an Ali 3. The only one I could think of, that Helen Mirren, Queen. Weren't there two movies with her as the Queen?
I think she did play the Queen a couple times, but I don't think that they were like biopic sequels.
Oh, there's so many where these biopics go to a certain point and then they stop. Where it's like, I wonder if maybe that's a genre we can create, biopic sequels, biopic yeah. franchises.
Yeah, we just have to find a biopic where they don't show the death of the person. Yeah. So like maybe if we can just convince the people to make Aretha Franklin just to like, I don't know, the 80s, we can take it from there.
My number two. It's another one that I try to mention anytime I can, and I don't feel like it got mentioned a couple weeks ago randomly. I got to mention it during our Ron Howard episode.
Are they brothers in Ice Pirates?
Yes, I wish. From 1991, directed by Ron Howard, starring of the famous Baldwin brothers, William Baldwin and Kurt Russell as Brian McCaffrey and Stephen McCaffrey. It's Backdraft. This is just one of those movies. It's such a good crime movie, and I can't see firefighters or fires without thinking of this movie, because
it's the quintessential firefighter movie.
It
but
is,
it's a lot more than that.
And the fire is a character in this movie. Like, the fire is fantastic. It's practical and it's real and it's cool. But at the heart of this movie is two brothers who don't really get along. You have the hero older brother who is everybody's hero, except the little brother who has had to grow up in his shadow and wants to admire him, but he's close enough to see the flaws. So he has trouble admiring him as the hero that everybody else does because he knows of the non-hero stuff. And it's a really, really good movie from that angle, from the fire angle, from the crime angle, from just a really good Ron Howard movie angle. And I love Backdraft. And this is another one that I feel like it's ahead of its time. Like, it was 1991. This movie is almost 30 years old, and it doesn't feel like it. Like, you watch it now, it holds up. Even something like Heat, which I put on a pretty high pedestal, Heat's kind of dated, and it was later. Like, it was a later movie than this. But Heat has moments to where it's like, that's a moment in time. Backdraft, I don't think, feels like that. Backdraft,
no, they're still spraying water on fires.
Yeah, there's still fires. There's still Baldwins. Like, there's still Ron Howard. Like, it's a really good movie. Another one that I feel like was just kind of ahead of its time. It's such a unique thing. It's a firefighter crime movie, which this one movie is its own genre. Like, it's a firefighter crime
mystery
thriller. Yeah, it fits into so many. Bright. This is such a weird comparison.
This should be good.
Bright is one of those movies to where that was made by a Netflix algorithm. Because it's like, you like fantasy, you like action, you like Will Smith, right. You like franchises.
You like Lord of the Rings and Will Smith.
You like big budget. That's how Bright.
And buddy cop movies.
Buddy cop, like magic. I feel like Backdraft is kind of like that. You like crime, you like brothers, you like fire,
you like
Ron Howard, you like Baldwins, you like Snake Plissken. It's one of those that if you describe it, it sounds like it's just made from a Netflix algorithm. But it's great.
Long before Netflix.
Yes.
Then my number one is a movie that I know I've talked about before, but I don't talk about as much. I try and sneak really old movies on because part of me thinks that, like, these are classics, but I'm not sure Dave's seen them. So maybe if I talk about them enough, he'll go back and watch On the Waterfront from 1954, directed by Ilya Kazan, starring Marlon Brando, Carl Malden, Lee J. Cobb, and Rod Steiger. And it allows me to squeeze a second movie on the list about a boxer. I mean, as I'm sure you're all keenly aware,
there's sodomy in this, right?
Not this one.
Not this one. This isn't the Brando.
This is
sodomy.
Not the Brando rape movie. Brando's Terry Molloy could have been a contender. Instead, he was a bum, and that was because of his brother Charlie, played by Steiger, colluding with local mob scumbag Cobb's Johnny Friendly. The movie won 8 Oscars, including editing, set decoration, writing, cinematography, directing, best picture. Eva Marie Saint won for best supporting actress in her film debut, but this is 100% Brando who did win for best lead. And especially like later in his career, I think people of our generation think of Marlon Brando as the Godfather, and that's basically it. Maybe you think of him in Apocalypse Now.
Or the sodomy one.
Or the rapey one. But I think people have this image of, like, Brando after he was Brando. People don't understand.
Like Fat Elvis. Like, yes. There's Elvis and there's Fat Elvis, just like there's Brando and there's Godfather.
And there's Brando. Fat Brando.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think people...
Because young Brando was a piece.
He was handsome, but handsome in a way that, like, he looked like he was from a rough area of town, a lot like Terry Molloy. But if you watch his face specifically in this movie, you can see regret, remorse, guilt all play across that face for a solid 108 minutes. Regret for taking a dive in that fight that led him to being basically a local thug. Remorse for his role in getting Saint's brother whacked. And regret for not telling her about his involvement, which inevitably becomes a problem when he falls for, because, hey, there's a woman in this movie. Guess what's going to happen? It really is a fantastic movie, and the Steiger Brando scene in the car where basically Terry's older brother is in the car to kill him. That's when I could have been a contender. That whole scene plays out, and then Steiger makes a choice, and you know what the outcome of that choice is going to be, but that shows the brother relation there. Brando's character looked up to his older brother for so long, but somehow still resented him for pulling him down into kind of a shitty path. But they're able to, I don't want to say reconcile because they weren't really on bad terms, but that relationship does kind of play a key role in the climax of the movie.
My number one, a lot of our movies have been two brothers. You've had Darjeeling, which was 3. Mm-hmm. I'm upping the ante a little bit.
You have 4 brothers.
I do have 4 brothers. Oh, God, 4 brothers. How did I not think of that? Four Brothers could have been my number one. It's right there in the title.
So. Right, it is.
But no, mine is from 1990, about four orphaned brothers who find themselves in an odd situation. In a sewer, maybe. Yeah, and then they're taken under the wing of a mutated rat in Steve Barron's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. These are my favorite brothers of all time, and that's why I hate the new ones, the new Rise of the Ninja Turtles. They're all different breeds. You can't be different breeds of turtles and be brothers. They're brothers, and that's why the live-action one failed, because they made them not brothers so that they could all fall for Venus de Milo. And no, it doesn't work like that. They're brothers. They're the same type of turtle. They can look different. That's fine, but they're the same breed.
Do we see them hatch? Do we know they were laid by the same turtle? We don't. Spoiler alert. They may not be brothers. Just because you and I are the same breed, we're both white guys, we're not brothers.
They're close enough. They were raised together. They were...
Yeah.
If you adopt two orphans and they're grown up together, they're brothers.
Right. Maybe so not then biological. The four different breeds of turtles, are they not brothers?
They're not.
Okay. They're not.
These are. In 1990, they are. It plays up that brother relationship, which... It's not just four brothers that are just having fun, which is what the Michael Bay ones do.
No, like, the Leo Raff stuff is great.
The Leo Raff stuff is really, really good. Yeah. And, you know, you have these two. Raff's a leader by nature but doesn't want to be a leader. Leo is just a natural leader. So you have them kind of conflicting. And, you know, you have Michelangelo is just the fun one. And then Donatello is just kind of trying to be the peacemaker among everybody. It's a great dynamic among four brothers who just happen to be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I love it. Judith Hogue.
The best April? Do we talk about this?
Yeah,
if it's Hogue or Turco?
I think...
Have we settled this debate?
I go back and forth. I think it depends on which day you ask me, but I think Hogue. It's going to be Hogue. Turco's good, but Hogue brought this depth to... I think Turco is more...
She was the right choice for that movie.
She's who I see as TV reporter. She's more believable as April O'Neil, the TV reporter. Judith Hogue brought so much more as maybe is April O'Neil the struggling reporter. Maybe that transition was fine, but I think Hogue offered so much more. But she also had more to do, so it's unfair to Turco to kind of say, like, oh, she didn't do... April didn't have that much to do in the second one.
Very
different
movies. Whereas
this one, she's, like, the emotional string of the whole movie, and she's our eyes into it, where Turco was great, but I really, really like Hogue, and, you know, she's my April.
Do you have any also-rans? I mean, do you want to mention your also-rans that we haven't talked about yet?
You know what? I had Warrior... Yep. Which got mentioned, Adaptation, which I mentioned. I would have mentioned more, but I didn't know if you'd have it. Mm-hmm. I love Nicolas Cage in that movie. He is so good as the two brothers. Dead Ringers, I mentioned. Gilbert Grape. The only one that didn't come up, Dead Man's Shoes. It's a really, really good revenge thriller by Shane Meadows. You know, Paddy Considine comes back from war and his brother's being tormented. It's very much like What's Eating Gilbert Grape, where he's protective of his disabled brother.
Yeah.
Similar themes, but different execution.
Less water towers.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you brought up Darjeeling. Yeah. Like, there's so many that, like, I probably would have tried to squeeze Bottle Rocket on there had I mentioned it. Just because of Future Man and Bob. Like, I love that dynamic between those two. This is one of those, if we forget we did it in 2 years from now, that's another one of those that if I redid the list in, like, 2 years, it wouldn't be different because it'd be movies between now and then. It'd just be different because...
Movies that I thought about. I mean, the only one that was on my radar that we didn't mention, and I didn't put on because we talked about From Dusk Till Dawn already, but I mean, I love the Gecko Brothers. Granted, Richie's not really around for the whole movie, but he certainly makes an impact when he is.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure there's some that I forgot.
Yeah.
Like
Turtles 3.
And we let down our bro audience by not making the obligatory Boondock Saints mention.
Yeah, I suppose that's very true. Either of them. I mean, we had two chances. We didn't even talk about that movie that much, so there's no reason to leave it off other than I like my five movies better than Boondock.
And the thing is, you know, Boondock gets such a bad rap. The first one was, at the time, was watchable.
Yeah.
It was a watchable dumb action movie. It's easy to hate after what became of Troy Duffy.
Oh, yeah.
If you see the documentary overnight, it makes you just regret ever liking that movie. But, I mean, it has a place. Like, Willem Dafoe is fantastic.
Yes,
in
he is.
But yeah, so that's the obligatory Boondock Saints reference. Next week, we are back with favorite Jennifer Garner
bro-y.
Movies. Sometimes I'll throw a bone to Ryan. And, like, a lot of times it's like, oh, let's make lists that'll make us think. Other times it's like, oh, he likes this person, so we'll... A Peppermint comes out next week, and I'm stoked for it. Ryan loves Jennifer Garner, so we're going to do
Guilty
our favorite
charged.
Jennifer Garner episodes, which, in hindsight, not as good of an idea as I thought it might have been for me. So one of us has also Rans. The
Absolutely.
Other might have five. So until then.
Keep it up.